These do smell lemony fresh.
They do. Because we keep it real here. PCMC.
You know, sadly, cold and flu season is still a very real thing.
You're sick again.
I don't know if I'm sick. Maybe it's just allergies. Or it is the fucking germ factory known as children, because I do teach children. And these kids have no etiquette and cough and sneeze and don't wash their hands.
There's no etiquette.
So now I've been sending them to the bathroom. And I'm like, you go wash your fucking hands.
Yeah. Good for you. Teach them. The Lysol wipes that you use to wipe down the microphones before we record, you should bring them to work with you and just wipe their fucking faces.
Well, I was thinking of just wearing a suit entirely made of Lysol.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like one of those biohazard suits.
Yeah. You'll be like the Slenderman.
I'm the cleaner. I come in and I just cleanse society.
This is the worst Marvel hero ever.
No, it's
the lemon cleaner.
It's the best Marvel hero.
Remember the What If comic where the lemon cleaner killed the rest of Marvel?
That would be me.
Yeah.
And all I would do is just rub my Lysol wipes on them.
On the back it says where it disinfects influenza, which is the flu for you common folk out there. Salmonella, influenza, another type of influenza. Wild type A. Herpes simplex virus type 1. Just type 1. If this means if you're with an unclean partner, I could just like wipe my crotch with this.
Well, I think it is like a wet wipe if they have herpes simplex 1. So it's just like you would take out the wipe,
mm-hmm.
or you would call the cleaner, me. You shine the cleansing signal.
Sure.
I would come and I would just wipe their genitals.
And the cleansing signal is just a big, like, lemon in the sky.
That's it.
And your Alfred is that lady from the Pine Sol commercial.
Yes.
The one who's like, sugar.
Yes.
She'll call you sugar and be like, sugar, the world needs you. And then you'll put on your lemon suit and then you'll go out.
And I'll go.
Absolutely.
And then I would have my linen scent sidekick known as Fabric.
R-I-C-K.
Rick, yeah.
Fab-Rick.
Rick, yeah.
Guys, this is a great idea. I'm Stan Lee.
I'm going to show my balls to my nurse.
First of all, I'm going to be a creep to women. Secondly, I'm stealing your idea, Emilio. I'm pulling what I call a Jack Kirby on you.
I'm going to Kirby you. And then in my old years, I'm going to get dementia. And my wife is going to die. And then I'm going to fall in love with my nurse who's going to embezzle my millions. With my lawyer.
Oh, yeah, that story is...
dead in the water?
No,
Or is it still continuing?
It's still continuing in a weird place, because now I see more articles that are focusing on the missing money.
Yeah.
So who knows what the hell's going on
with
that.
But this is Pop Culture Man Children, a podcast for you and you...
And that's it.
And you and all of you.
It's for the people.
It's for the babies.
Hey, PCBs, how are you?
The Pop Culture Babies.
Welcome to PCMC.
For more information on who we are and what we do, the easiest way is to go to the iTunes, iTunes.com/Pop Culture Man Children. It's not one word. They're all split up. Pop Culture Man Children.
Mm-hmm.
You hit subscribe.
Mm-hmm.
You rate and review.
You bet.
And you tell us, hey, listen, I have an idea for an episode.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll name an episode after you. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, why not? We also have the Instagram page as well.
Yes.
So Instagram.com/popculturemanchildren. Start using the hashtag PCMC if you want to tag us in nonsense that you collect, whether it's Barbie dolls, cookie jars, or banks, pens, or, photos.
Ashes of celebrities and old relatives.
Yeah, whatever.
It's all worth collecting. It's all worth nerding over.
Whatever you nerd over, you tag us, PCMC.
Yes.
That is Michael Bongiorno.
Hello, how are you? To my right is the Sultan of SWAT. The,
I like that, actually.
The fast to my furious, Mr. Emilio Sparks.
How you doing?
You're looking kempt today.
I did groom last month.
Yeah, is that what? Oh, last month?
Yeah.
That's what must be what I'm noticing.
Yeah, the eyebrows and the beard.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You've got a nice dark beard. My beard is very white. I have like a Reed Richards beard.
Yeah.
It's got the Reed Richards.
Well, you know, you did age exponentially by the time you hit 25.
Well,
I've never seen somebody age. But like, you aged in two ways though, you know? And here's how you did. As I like to know him, the Generation 1... Mike Bongiorno.
Yeah, G1, yeah.
Was fat, had curly, curly hair, mm-hmm. no facial hair.
A lot like Superbad
Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill, yeah.
You relatively looked 45 years old.
Yeah, yeah. That was V1.
Now, V2.0.
Yeah.
You're slender. You don't have a wrinkle on your face. You have no hair.
No hair.
And the only thing that has happened now is that you see some gray whiskers.
A lot of gray whiskers.
Which is fine. I'd rather you age this way
than
how you looked at version one when you look like a 45-year-old man.
That's the sad thing about being really out of shape is it makes you look older. You know what I mean? Even if you're just a baby child.
And you were. You were a baby child.
I was just
child.
A child. I knew nothing of the world.
No.
Even though I was much fatter then and I'm in much better shape now, I'd say I probably have the exact same energy I had then. Because then my youthful energy was being sapped by my extra weight, and now I'm just losing my life force because I'm aging rapidly.
Well, what I would believe is that you store your chi kind of like a way the bear hibernates in the winter.
Sure.
So all you got to do is just figure out how
I've been storing it.
You've been storing it. So you got to figure out how to do the Tai Chi so that way you can release it. And you know those infomercials where Dick Van Dyke does Tai Chang, maybe you should do that.
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
There's infomercials. I watch you. See, you're not up late at night. I am. Things are happening at night.
Things are happening during the day too. It's called work.
Yeah, I don't believe in that. But I believe
when I text you and you don't text me back because you're sleeping.
But I text you back at the time in which I get up, which my day starts.
Right, when I'm coming home from work.
Which is fine. Don't fucking judge me.
You know what? I am. But go on.
We're on two different life streams right now, pal.
We certainly are.
All right? If you're up late at night, which you never will be, I don't think you're up till... You know what? You get up early. So one day, when you're getting up, when the birds start to chirp, when the sky is still dark... Why don't you turn on your TV?
Yeah.
Any infomercial, 2, 5, 7, I don't know, Fox News, whatever, you put it on and you'll see Dick Van Dyke.
And what is he
does
selling?
Tai Chang.
What is
it's
Tai Chang?
It's a form of Tai Chi.
But Dick actually does it?
Yes, he does.
What does Jerry Van Dyke do?
I think Jerry Van Dyke is dead.
I hope Jerry's alive still.
Yeah, Jerry Van Dyke died January 5th. 2018.
I'm going to have to cross him off the possible guest list.
It'll be a sad day when Burt Young croaks.
Yeah, which is any second now.
Any second.
Basically.
They wrote him off Rocky, so.
Yeah, Ryan Coogler was like, I don't have any need for you.
Apparently, Ryan Coogler doesn't want to come back to Creed 2.
As you said many episodes ago, it's got the Stallone stink on it now.
Does. It's over.
I think he's done. I think he's busy making, I think, the third biggest movie of all time now.
Yeah.
But you know what? That brings us to the news. A couple of months ago on the news, I told you that Saudi Arabia was finally going to open up movie theaters for the first time in years.
Wow. A reference and a callback.
It's been 35 years since a movie has been released in Saudi Arabia. What do you think the first movie they're releasing is?
Black Panther.
Black Panther. There have been talks about opening theaters in Saudi Arabia for a while. The most recent development comes as a result of the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's concerted push to increase access to entertainment for citizens. This is exciting. They haven't had movies in 35 years.
You mean they don't want to see John Cena chug an alcoholic beverage from his asshole?
I watched that this morning.
What, Cock Blockers?
Yeah.
You went to the movie?
Yeah.
How was it?
We'll talk about it in segment 3.
All right.
Okay, so this is a weird one. In England, or I should say in the UK, they've been doing novelizations of Doctor Who episodes written by the writers. So Russell T. Davies did a novelization of his first episode, Rose, which is the episode that brought back the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Moffat just did a novelization of his Doctor Who anniversary special, the 50th anniversary special. He did something crazy in it, which is... He added something that wasn't in the TV special, which is he wanted to figure out a way to add those two weird Doctor Who movies that starred Peter Cushing. I don't know if the audience knows this, but there were two Doctor Who movies in the 60s, but they were not canon. It was mostly to showcase the Daleks because there was a Dalek fever in the UK. His name was Doctor Who in it. He was not Gallifreyan. He was he was English, but he was a real human. And he was played by Peter Cushing. It's not canon at all, but he wanted to figure out a way to make it in the canon. So what he did was, there's a scene in the 50th anniversary special where they're in the Black Archive, which is an archive of all these, you know, these things that have to do with the Doctor and the history of the Doctor. So in the Black Archive, in this new novelization, they come across posters for that movie. And Kate Stewart, the Brigadier's daughter, she says basically the movies exist in that world now. That they were movies based on the Doctor, and the Doctor even helped produce them. And the Doctor actually was friends with Peter Cushing. And wait, here's where it gets crazier. The Doctor liked Peter Cushing so much that when he knew that they were going to make Rogue One, he used the TARDIS to bring Peter Cushing to now to make Rogue One. So they're saying now in the universe of Doctor Who, Rogue One doesn't have CGI Peter Cushing. That's just what they're telling us. It was actually the real Peter Cushing who hopped in the TARDIS.
Let me get this straight. CGI Peter Cushing, according to Doctor Who canon,
yes,
states that he hopped in the TARDIS,
right,
and went to Jyn Erso territory.
Lucasfilm is just covering it up by saying that it's CGI. It's actually the real Peter Cushing because the Doctor became friends with him. And said, hey, you know, in the future, in 2016, they make another Star Wars movie after you die, but I think you should be in it. Why don't you jump in the TARDIS and you could be in it? And that's what happened.
Only Doctor Who could salvage that movie.
Only Doctor Who can change the continuity of both the Doctor Whoiverse and kind of the Star Warsiverse. It's pretty odd.
You know, maybe the toys would have sold better if they actually did that storyline.
Like if they like had a TARDIS?
Yeah.
Like, they just sold the TARDIS in the Jyn Erso packet, and kids were like, what is this?
What
I don't understand.
What's going on here? You know, my thing is, though, why even take such a forgettable, weird, non-canon Doctor Who film and then turn it into something like this?
Well, because I think the fans for a long time have been...
Yeah, but it makes no sense. Why would you do that for? You have all these other doctors you could work with. Why are you using an off-brand of an off-brand of a doctor who doesn't even have powers and he's not even Gallifreyan?
But he's not really a doctor. It's in the world of Doctor Who, they made a Doctor Who movie. It's a way of saying, look, we know that there's these weird two Doctor Who movies that don't fit into our canon. What if for the anniversary we say that they exist within the world of Doctor Who? These weird movies.
So strange.
And that,
man,
the Doctor was there on the set, you know, going to Crafty, eating baby carrots, giving him advice. It had to have been a big culture shock for Peter Cushing because, you know, he's friends with the Doctor and he goes to do this little movie called Star Wars and he doesn't know it's going to be a success. And the Doctor says, listen, it's going to be a success like you've never seen before. They're going to make movies well after you're dead, but I feel like you should be in the movie. So hop on in.
Take off your
shoes. I could see Peter Cushing reading the script and being like, you know, this would be the second Star Wars script he read after the original.
Yeah.
He just shot the original and then jumped to TARDIS and now he's on the set of Rogue One and he's like, what the fuck is a Jyn Erso?
I think everybody said that though collectively.
Yeah.
But then he'd be really aggravated.
He'd be like, this is the worst Star Wars movie ever. And then David Tennant would be like, oh, no. I didn't stop by the 90s, but it got way worse. The Natalie Portman ones are terrible. And he'd be like, who's Natalie Portman?
That should really be a book where he just literally Tennant takes Cushing just throughout history of just stinkers of Star Wars.
Yeah.
And then analyzes each individual's like career.
Yeah.
Shits the bed as the Empress in the Star Wars films, but gets to be the spokeswoman for Chanel and Dior.
Who does that?
Natalie Portman. Yeah.
Once you confused me when you said Empress because you're just making up shit that you don't know about.
Yes.
She's a princess. Queen.
All right.
She's a queen.
Okay, let me ask,
how dare you?
Okay, let me ask you a question.
She's Queen Amidala.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What's another word for queen?
There's no other word for queen.
Empress, you fucking moron.
No, because an empress would have to be in an empire, and she believed in democracy.
No, she was an empress.
She very much was against the empire. That's kind of the whole thing. That's where her and her husband, her secret husband, Anakin, that's where they split. And then he choked her, and she died. But really, the emperor killed her. Listen, I can't explain Star Wars to you now. Let's go to the Russo brothers' letter. This has been all over.
I wanted to talk about this.
Premieres always happen before films come out in the general movie theaters for all audiences. So there's going to be a lot of, you know, surprises in the new Marvel Infinity War. So the Russo brothers, who directed Avengers Infinity War, they wrote this letter and printed it out and signed it, and then they took a picture of them, I guess it's one of them, with the Infinity Gauntlet, I guess the toy one or the replica one.
Yeah.
Holding the letter, and they put it on Twitter.
That's great.
And basically this is what the letter says. To the greatest fans in the world, we're about to embark on the Avengers Infinity War press tour. We will be visiting fans all over the world, screening only a limited amount of selected footage from the film in order to avoid spoiling the story for future viewers. So not even showing the whole thing. We will not screen the film in its entirety until the Los Angeles premiere shortly before the film's global release. Everyone involved with the film has worked incredibly hard for the past 2 years, maintaining the highest level of secrecy. Only a handful of people know the film's true plot. We're asking that when you see Infinity War in the coming months, that you maintain that same level of secrecy so that all fans can have equal experience when they watch it for the first time. Don't spoil it for others the same way you wouldn't want it spoiled for you. Good luck and happy viewing, the Russo brothers. Hashtag Thanos demands your silence.
Yeah, like that's going to happen. You know how many dumb bastards on Twitter are going to start?
Yeah, I'm going to like stay away from... Although, we kind of know what's going to happen, right? Tony's going to die, probably. Maybe Cap's going to die. I mean, I guess there'll be more surprises than that.
Why do they got to die?
I just think they're going
to
die.
Why do you want to write off two of the guys that made the franchise?
Because they're done. Their contracts are done. I think they want to die. Especially, I think, Tony is going to die.
Why? So he can go on and do movies that are typically just Robert Downey Jr. playing a character who's supposed to be somebody else, but it's Robert Downey Jr.?
No, he wants to reboot Ally McBeal.
You know what? I wouldn't mind that, actually.
Did you like... Were you a McBeal head?
When Robert was on, yeah. But I felt like they wrote his character off once he started to hit that bad patch again.
You mean creeping into other people's houses and falling asleep in children's beds? That's when you're real fucked up. When you're like, oh, I thought this was my house. It's a child's bed.
You know that kid is definitely telling stories like, yo, Iron Man slept in my bed.
Yeah, he smelled like sadness and booze from the Ally McBeal craft service table.
There was just some white powder around his nose, and he was all sweaty and clammy.
Come on. That kid's got a story to tell.
Right? Could you imagine, like, yo, Iron Man cuddled with me.
Cuddled with me. Oh, God. You know, I don't know the details. Was the kid in the bed?
I don't know, but for this story, he was.
The family would not stop screaming.
And then all of a sudden, nowadays, we're just sitting around at dinner talking about, remember the time Robert Downey Jr. slept over?
I'd make that better landmark. I'd put a little, like, plaque that said Robert Downey Jr. Under the window that he crept into, I'd say Robert Downey Jr., parentheses, during the bad times, crawled in this window, 1995, 6, whatever it was.
Doesn't matter.
Whenever the bad times were.
That, yeah, you should, and it's
around when he was the villain in U.S. Marshals, spoiler alert. It's the sequel to The Fugitive.
It is. It's good.
I enjoyed it. I saw both The Fugitive and U.S. Marshals in the theater.
Tommy Lee Jones is good.
Absolutely.
I like Wesley Snipes' performance better than Harrison Ford's.
Which one was he in?
Harrison Ford was in The Fugitive and Wesley Snipes was in U.S. Marshals.
Right, right. RDJ was like a good guy, and in the end we found out he was up to no good.
That's typical RDJ.
Typical RDJ, especially at that time. I bet Tommy Lee Jones had no truck with his nonsense.
No. Tommy Lee looks like a man that just doesn't take any guff.
He seems like a guy who does it in two. We're to do two takes and then I'm walking.
I'm done.
I'm back in my trailer and we walk at five.
That's it.
I don't have time for you to find your little performance. I don't have time for you to improvise. Okay? I'm Tommy Lee Jones. I come, I do what I do, and I leave.
That was Humphrey Bogart. He was done by five.
Absolutely.
And same thing went for Clark Gable.
Those old guys, it was like a job. It was like you get working two, in the coal mine.
You get two takes, 5 o'clock we wrap, dinner by 5:15.
Yeah.
And I get a scotch by 6:30.
Oh, absolutely. Drink all night.
That's it.
Tommy Lee Jones, I believe, was born at the age of 75. Like, where is he young ever?
Never. But
he's,
I don't know if
he's like B. Arthur in that regard.
But I don't know if he ever did anything prior to being old Tommy Lee Jones.
So he maybe like he broke when he was old?
I think he broke like B. Arthur, like they're like 85 when he
Actually, I think during like Maud, she was probably like 40, but she looked like 80 because it was those 70s clothes and those very like flowy blouses.
It was like similar to you, but like at least you figured out like you could age backwards.
Yeah.
They didn't. So you got to big up the Russo brothers for trying to be like, hey, don't spoil the movie for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it to yourself. Don't be a social media douchebag.
Yeah.
Like, I like that, but I think they're fighting a bigger dragon than they can slay with this.
First of all, that's a great metaphor. Secondly, I mean, look at what we do. You know what I mean? We, it's, you know, we live in a culture of both consuming and producing, and it's hard to not spoil things. We try to give spoiler alerts. Somebody listening right now probably was getting ready to watch U.S. Marshals and was like, oh, fuck, they ruined it for me. I was gonna listen to PCMC then watch U.S. Marshals and go to bed. Can I ask you an honest question, though? When something's spoiled for you, does it really ruin it for you? Or do you still watch and go, it's art, I like it?
Okay, as a wrestling fan.
Okay, yes.
Most stuff is spoiled constantly.
Right, isn't that part of the fandom? Like, aren't you looking to see what's going to happen online?
Well, those are douches.
Okay.
And there are dirt sheets, and there are guys like that who I can't stomach. Dave Meltzer, who will constantly will spoil professional wrestling because they need the hot take and the clickbait to show that they have some type of pseudo-dominance within this odd wrestling journalism culture. So they want to spoil certain
things. Of which you are a titan.
I am a titan, but we don't do it in the douchebag way.
So you don't spoil things on WrestleRap?
No. No.
Do you look at that stuff?
I try to avoid it because I find it disrespectful.
All right, let's say you do accidentally see it. Do you feel like, oh, it's ruined for me?
No. I like the fact that we could, you know what's coming. But, man, when they hit that money spot, yeah, and they rub it right and it's sweet for us, yeah, I think it's better not knowing.
Of course.
Than knowing. Like last year specifically, around WrestleMania last year, there was a ladder match for the Raw Tag Team Championships. And it was Enzo and Kaz. It was The Bar, which is Sheamus and Cesaro. It was the Bullet Club. And the New Day comes out and announces that we're adding somebody else to the match. And it's this legendary tag team known as the Hardy Boys. Now, there was speculation all week. Do the Hardy Boys sign? Do they come to WWE? Do they not? Do they? What's going on? Everybody thought that the New Day, which is a tag team, was going to enter the match and wrestle. The Hardys
come
out.
Now I know how you feel when I talk about Star Wars. Continue.
People lose their shit.
You're just saying a lot of words at me right now, and I'm trying to keep up.
There was an element of surprise is what I'm saying, because WWE kept it close to the hip. But certain people knew.
Right.
Because of these douchebaggy spoilers. That's all I'm saying.
All right. So obviously it's better to not know.
I think
but
when
you do find out, does it really ruin it for you?
No.
Does it really spoil it for you?
No, because they don't know the outcome of the match. So if somebody debuts or returns, whatever, it's going to happen. Like one time Dave Bautista will be in a WWE ring again.
Yeah.
Now if they announce it or they spoil it, that's fine.
Right.
I'm cool with that.
Because you don't know how it's going to play out. You don't know what's going to happen.
Exactly.
I mean, a spoiler is, it's a fact. It's trivia. You know, somebody says to you, hey, guess what? You know, at the end of Fight Club, Tyler Durden is really the protagonist. Yeah. He's a split personality. Okay, I could see that spoiling for you. But at the same time, that means you don't watch Fight Club? You don't watch that good movie?
I think you just need to have a set of blinders or, you know, just understand what culture we live in now, where everybody wants to feel like they're in the know, and they want to feel like, you know, wow, I need this. I need to know this, you know, and then you could surprise me in different ways with it. But the fact that you get this information and then you could be able to tweet about it or post about it or do a vlog about it, you want to feel like you're first when you need to know some stuff. Nah, that's not cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
But again, this is the world that we live in, where it's divided. Me personally, if I know a wrestler or a movie or an ending to a movie, I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
I don't need to be like, oh man.
Right.
You ruined the experience for me, because you don't ruin the experience.
No, you don't ruin the experience. The point is,
the Russo brothers want you to keep it to yourself.
Keep it to your goddamn
self.
You want to come with me over to the trailer corner?
Yeah, bro.
All right, let's go over. Have you seen any trailers? I've seen a couple cool trailers.
Like what?
Fahrenheit 451 with...
I've seen that one.
Michael P... Is it P or B? I always fuck it up.
Michael B.
Michael B. Jordan.
Yes.
Looks pretty cool.
I'm excited.
What do you think about it?
You know, I like the roles that Michael B. has been choosing.
Yeah.
They're all over the place. That this is not... You know how certain actors will be known for one thing? Like, oh, that's the action movie guy.
Yeah.
Or... that's the dramedy guy.
Yeah.
Or, hey, that's Matthew McConaughey. He does rom-coms.
Right.
You know? Like, it's either you're a Stallone, It's either you're Colin Firth.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you're Matthew McConaughey, and there's no in between.
He's doing a lot of different
things. What I like about Michael B. is that he is dipping his foot into everything.
Yeah.
And showing his range as an actor.
Yeah.
And a lot of actors do that. But I think because of the success of Black Panther and the success of Creed, he really is in the public eye.
Yeah.
And can show people or show his colleagues it's okay to take the risk.
Yeah, yeah.
Take the risk. If the role pulls to you or calls to you, take the risk.
Yeah.
Do the role.
Yeah.
I think he's a fantastic actor.
Yeah, me too. And I'm excited about the movie. Part of me is a little bit worried. Not worried, but part of me feels like I wish it wasn't an HBO movie. And there have been great HBO movies, but it's got Michael B. Jordan. It's got Michael Shannon, who's great and creepy. And it looks really good. I'm wondering, like, why wasn't this a theatrical release?
Because sometimes they don't need to be.
I mean, this is
arguably
the first I mean, there was a Fahrenheit 451 directed by Francois Truffaut, but that was very different from the book.
Yeah, but look at the world we're living in now, where Netflix rules the roost.
But if it were a Netflix movie, I wouldn't feel the way I feel about it as an HBO movie. Something about HBO movie, to me, sounds chintzy. Like, HBO movie.
Why? They're doing that Paterno film with Al Pacino, and that's an Academy Award winner.
Yeah, it's they've done good movies, but then they've also done Breast Men.
Yeah, but they're taking risk, though. And they're doing movies that they think fit the elk of what the people want to see.
But why is it such a risk? This is a classic book.
Well, you have trepidation towards it because it's HBO. Not because it's the actors attached to the project, but because it's HBO. Where you have streaming sites like Amazon and YouTube and Netflix, they have to keep up with these titans now. So what do? All right, well, we got to grab Michael B. Jordan for this. We're going to grab Al Pacino for that. We're going to do this Andre the Giant documentary. We're going to do this four-hour Gary Shandling documentary. But those are the things that they need to do to keep in competition.
I guess you're right. Maybe I'm thinking more of like what HBO movies were like in the 90s. You know, like
HBO has changed, dude.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, HBO's good. I just when I saw the trailer, it looked so cool. I was like, oh, when's this coming out? And then when I saw HBO, I was like, oh, really? Like, I wonder if Michael B. Jordan knew that going into it.
Yeah, he had to.
No, sometimes you make a film, you know, like they made the movie Bright, and I don't think Will Smith knew that that was going to be a straight to Netflix. I think Netflix came in and bought it.
There's no way that you don't know what your distribution's going to be.
Sure there is. Yeah, that can
believe
happen.
So you didn't that think totally that Will happen. You didn't think that Will Smith, who probably has his hand as a producer or an executive producer in certain films that he does with his name attached to him, you don't think he knows where it's going to go?
I mean he probably knew before everyone else, but at the same time I think the production probably began with an eye towards theatrical release. I mean, the same thing happened with the last Cloverfield movie, Cloverfield 3. They made that for a theatrical release, and then kind of last minute, they made the Netflix deal.
Yeah?
Yeah. But I guess you're right. I mean, nowadays, what does it all mean?
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't really matter anymore.
Did you see the trailer for Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Yes, I did, because it was on Facebook.
What did you think of it?
I want to see that.
I'm a Fred Rogers fan.
He wrote every fan back. We definitely could have gotten him to be on the show.
Oh, he would have been like, Emilio and Mike, thank you so much. I don't want to do your show because it's a piece of shit, but thank you so much for asking me. I hope you boys have a good day.
But here's an 8x10 and Trolley.
We'd be like, thank you. Is Trolley available? Can Trolley be on the show?
I would interview Trolley.
Absolutely. I'd interview anybody. His sweaters. His sneakers. No, you know, he like woke up at like 5 o'clock in the morning every day, jogged, worked out, then like studied. I don't know what he studied. Then like journaled. And like he was just like the perfect human being. All joy and love and perfection.
You know, looking at that trailer and then analyzing my own life.
Yeah.
I've realized I'm a piece of shit compared to Fred Rogers.
Oh, I mean, I think we're all pieces of shit compared to Fred Rogers. I mean, he would make even the best among us look like a fucking asshole. I'm really interested in seeing how they produced that show for so long and like what was it really like.
Watch, he was a tyrant.
You know, I wouldn't be
surprised. He was an
alcoholic. No, not at all.
He was angry.
Probably not. Bite your tongue. But I wouldn't be surprised if he were a perfectionist.
I could see that.
If he were like, listen, everybody.
He wrote every song.
We're going to get this right and you're not going to go home until we get this right. So pack it fucking in.
Oh, so he wasn't like Clark Gable and Tommy Lee Jones where it'd be two takes and we're done by five?
No, we're going to do this right. We're going to do this right. I didn't like the way Charlie came around on the track. He kind of jittered a little bit. We're going to do this again.
And then he's giving Charlie a pep talk.
Unless it was live. Were those shows live?
No, those shows, they can't be live.
I guess we'll learn. We'll learn from the documentary. Won't You Be My Neighbor? Speaking of Charlie, I got to go use the bathroom.
That's a nice segue.
You know I'm the king.
All right, Charlie. Neighborhood of make-believe.
On the Instagram at Pop Culture Man Children. Anything PCMC related, use that hashtag PCMC.
This is the theme to Gary Show. The theme to Gary Show. Gary Shanlon called me and he asked me to write a theme song. You know, I've never seen any of the Gary Shanlon Show.
I think we were too young to get it.
Oh, I'm sure we were too young to get it. I did love Larry Sanders, though.
See, that was another show that was I felt was too young for me to get.
I started watching it in its last season. But then a couple years ago, when it was on Netflix, I watched it all on Netflix.
One of the things that really raised my public interest with Gary Shanley was two things. It was the Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee episode with Jerry Seinfeld. And when he was on Conan O'Brien, when Conan was talking to him about when he got fired from...
Yeah.
NBC.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was like, wow, I want to know more about Gary Shandling. And then this documentary comes out of nowhere.
4 hours long.
Insane.
Made by Judd Apatow, who was a close friend of his.
First off, I think anything Judd Apatow, I'm going to watch. And
I mean, most of his movies are 4 hours long. This was the first one that felt like it needed to be 4 hours long.
But again, like I think that's the type of producer or director or writer Judd Apatow is. You know, I think he gets a bad rap for being, oh, he makes
dick
and fart jokes.
Right.
You know, but there's also...
Some of his stuff is great.
Funny People, I think, is fantastic.
Yeah, Funny People is really great.
I kind of believe that there are certain elements with Funny People that maybe the flawedness of the character and like his inability to have anybody may be indicative to Gary Shandling after watching the 4 hours.
Oh, yeah. I think Adam Sandler's character in Funny People is probably an amalgamation of...
Several people.
But I think it's mostly Gary Shandling and Roseanne.
Has to be.
Because Apatow wrote for both of them.
Yeah.
Gary Shandling mentored Apatow.
Yeah.
I don't think Gary Shandling was as much of a asshole as Adam Sandler is in that movie. But he definitely had... the documentary is warts and all, which I like. They show, you know, some of the mistakes he made and some of the stupid shit he did, like breaking up with his girlfriend and then firing her from the show and then her suing him for wrongful termination, which you can't fire somebody just because they're your girlfriend and you broke up with them. To be really honest with you, Gary Shandling is a guy who, as a comedian, I always admired because he... So it's part of an older guard. But I never found him that funny. I never laughed that much at his material. I liked Larry Sanders. But the thing that makes me interested in him now is actually all the Buddhism and the Zen shit that people go... Some people don't like about him. Because if you've not seen the documentary and if you don't know anything about Gary Shandling, he was this very sort of like neurotic 80s comic. A lot like early Seinfeld or a lot like, you know, Paul Reiser. And he got to a point in his life where he became like the Zen Buddhist. And in interviews, he would still make jokes, but he would be very, very like philosophical and existential. And some people thought it was very weird. He wasn't as pretentious as Jim Carrey is now. Because Jim Carrey, I think... is almost like offensive. He's like trying to turn people off. Whereas Gary Shandling, I think he was trying to like enlighten people. But that's what interests me more than him as a comedian. The later stuff. Because that's kind of like what I'm like. I'm not a Buddhist or Zen, but I'm somebody who's always like searching. I'm that kind of person who's always searching for something.
The later years of Gary Shandling was more subdued and more easygoing and more like, hey, listen.
Yeah.
I had a lot of ups and downs. There was a lot of emptiness inside of me.
From when he was a kid, he lost his brother. And he didn't go to his brother's funeral because his mother didn't want him to go.
I had all this stuff going on years ago that I repressed. And then it came out later in my work in pain.
Yeah.
And then I woke up and I was tired of it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to change. And it wasn't a change that happens overnight.
Yeah.
It's a change that you constantly work on forever.
Yeah.
And I seen that and I was like, okay, that's the type of teacher and mentor people need in this world.
Yeah.
Because they're constantly trying to figure it out and trying to get it right.
Yeah.
The only way that you do get it right is just by living every day and not trying to be so hard on yourself.
Right, right.
Even towards the end with the phone tapping incident.
Yeah.
He felt real self-conscious about his work.
Yeah.
And that's why he felt like he bombed on Conan one time.
Right, right.
But Conan was there, you know, easing him through it.
Right, right.
You know, and then he started to get his confidence back and started to do like the small intimate comedy clubs all over Los Angeles again. And you fall down 100 times, get back up 101.
It's weird though, because he was this sort of perfect comedy boom 80s comic where he was sharp as a tack, sharp, sharp, sharp. And he got to a point where he was like, I want to evolve, even if my evolution means I might bomb sometimes, or my evolution means that I'm going to say something very truthful, and maybe making a joke is in some ways inherently dishonest, so I'll be less funny, which is so different from someone like Seinfeld. That's why that Comedian Cars Getting Coffee episode is so amazing, because you've got two guys from the same era that kind of came up at the same time and were very similar at one point. But now Seinfeld has continued down that path, and Gary Shandling has gone down this totally other path. And Seinfeld is still friends with him, but doesn't quite understand what his friend is talking about. And it's funny when they're like arguing, and you know, Gary Shandling asks him some philosophical question or existential question, and Seinfeld's like, what does it matter? Gary Shandling's like, what does it matter? It's the whole reason you're alive. You know, they both are making good points, but I...
Which is part of the existential, though.
Right, right.
Seinfeld answers in an existential way. What does it matter?
Right, right.
Gary Shandling, as a Buddhist, wants to know why you feel it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
No, because the reason we're here right now doing this podcast talking about Gary Shandling is because it touched us in a specific way.
Right.
So that's the reason why we're doing what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Because that is the reaction to an action. It's like throwing a pebble in water and watching it ripple.
There's a lot to learn from him, both about life and about performing. You know, we've been podcasting for a long time. Before we did PCMC, I would do the Emilio Sparks Experience with you. The last episode was a Christmas Gumtacular. Don't worry, another one's coming. And
yeah, I you know what the crazy part is? I have like 9 in the can.
What are you doing? Your fans are waiting.
I know.
But anyway, you remember this. When we first started doing podcasts together, what, 2009 or whatever? I had done stand-up, and I had a hard time doing a podcast. I wasn't getting laughs back like you get from stand-up. You really had to teach me that on a podcast, like, I'm allowed to not make jokes. I'm allowed, like, a conversation that, like, we're having right now, I would have never done that in the beginning.
No, you couldn't, because you would just, like, punchline, 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 punchline.
Right, which is in some ways inherently dishonest, right?
Yes.
Because it's a show, whereas, you know, maybe I don't feel like being funny right now. When Gary wouldn't feel like being funny, doesn't matter if he's on Conan or whatever, would just not be funny, which is something Seinfeld could never do, because Seinfeld has this blue collar, like, hey, they pay us, this is our job, we're there to make the people laugh. Seinfeld doesn't see it really as an art the way I think Gary Shandling did.
I don't know about that. That is a bold statement. I think Seinfeld sees it as art, but I think it's just...
I think he sees it as craft and showbiz. I don't think he sees it as art.
We literally sat through a four-hour documentary on Gary Shandling.
Yeah.
So we're looking at it that he did look at it as an art and as a craft and would go down a road if there was no joke. He would go down a road and then tell a story and then we might get an awkward chuckle.
Right.
You know, Ricky Gervais.
Oh, that whole thing.
You know, cited him as a comic influence. And when they had...
Oh, that was amazing.
And it was awkward.
So awkward.
And it was awkward because both of their styles were just completely different.
And Ricky Gervais kept being on. And the more he was trying to be on, the more Gary Shandling
was off.
Was like, no, I don't want to be on.
I'm good.
If you've never seen this, go to YouTube. You could find it. It is...
It's good.
It's amazing, though. It's kind of... It's awkward and... You can see Shandling's a little bit angry, but it every time Ricky Gervais tries to like do a bit, he's like, "Why? What are you doing? Why are you doing a bit?" Like at one point, Gary Shandling's putting on contacts and he's doing it over the sink, and Ricky Gervais is like, "Don't do that over the sink," and he's like, "I do this every day. You think I've never put on contact lenses?" He almost is like being anti-comedy, but anti-comedy in a funny way because he's not letting Gervais. It's almost like a boxing match where he's like rope-a-doping Gervais. He's letting Gervais spin his wheels and get tired, and then Gary will come out with this very truthful like 1-2 punch.
It was so much so, it was like they showed that scene in the documentary where he's boxing Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
And Baldwin was getting pissed.
Yeah.
Because that's what Shandling was doing.
Because they were...
He was rope-a-doping him verbally.
Right, because they're boxing and
they're
like...
They're having an interview.
Yeah, yeah. In between, like, rounds, he's asking him serious questions about his, like, family and stuff. And you could see Baldwin is not interested in talking about personal things. It's kind of amazing. To go back to Seinfeld, you think about what is the definition of an artist. I think an artist is an author, and in some ways they show you themselves. And I think... Seinfeld's a great tactician and he's a great craftsman, but we don't know anything about him. You know what I mean? Like his inner life, the way he sees the world, his experiences, his family, none of that stuff really comes through the jokes. It's all jokes. You know what I mean? Whereas Gary Shandling's work, especially his later work, was very revealing about who he was.
Yeah, but jokes could be that as well, though. Well, if you look at Seinfeld's work, I think you know what you're going to get with Seinfeld, which is performance art. You're not necessarily going to get that personal style. You're not going to get Mark Maron. You're not getting Gary Shandling. You're not going to get Sarah Silverman. You're not going to get that.
Well, Sarah Silverman, though, she's a good example because I think she is very much doing a performance. But
she
I
also
still
lets
think
in
some
herself.
Of her, yeah, herself comes out. The reason why I would say, to me, I don't think he's an artist is I think... If he came to a point in his writing where he had a choice to either make a really strong punchline or reveal something about himself...
He's doing the really strong
punchline. He'd go for the punchline where Gary Shandling would go for the truth.
But then what hits, though? And what are you going for?
Well, that's the thing. I think Gary Shandling was going to like have this like experience where I think Seinfeld is... He's out there and he's like, I'm a showman. I'm putting on a show.
Yeah, but that's two different... Yeah, but they, again, under the House of Comedy...
Well, I'm not saying Seinfeld's bad. I'm just arguing why I wouldn't call him an artist.
But see, I call him an artist. The type of artistry is performance art.
Do you think we're artists? Do you think this is art right
now? Yes, there is. I think this is an art. There is an art to talking. There is an art of conversation. You talk long enough, somebody listening on the other end is going to formulate an opinion and a picture of what's going on. As pretentious as that sounds, yeah, I think the good podcasts or good podcasters or good radio broadcasters, that there's a level of performance art.
I don't know if Seinfeld would call himself an artist. He seems like the kind of guy that would not like that word. He seems to be a guy who doesn't like any kind of pretension.
For the success that he's had, for the millions upon millions of dollars he's made, I think he is as grounded as one could be, and he gets it. He gets it. So it's just a matter of how he portrays or highlights his art. Now, whether he calls it art or not, it's still art. I think we're going to get a Jerry Seinfeld that knows what he does and does what he does, and that's it. And nobody else is going to tell him differently. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Like, I think a lot of those comedians are like that. They're just going to – they know what they know, and they know what they're going to do. And whether or not they play
it – That was interesting about Shandling, because Shandling was like, I'm going to try different things. I'm going to not make a TV show and try to work on like
built. But that's the type of comedian he was. Not even a comedian. That's the type of celebrity and personality he was. He wasn't. Right. he wasn't into the idea of fame and whatever. He was just like, to hell with it, man. I'm just gonna do it like this, and I don't care. Nobody's gonna tell me differently. Like, this is what I'm gonna do. I've seen the way it is. I've seen how vapid the idea of celebrity is, and that's what the second part of that documentary really showed.
Yeah,
I think the vapidness of Hollywood and how he wanted to change that.
And because it won't make you happy. If you think that being famous is gonna make you happy, it's not the answer to your problems. And I think he dealt with that.
I think he dealt with it in a way that he could best possibly wrap his head around it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that the way he gave back was through the knowledge of what he knew.
Right.
So that's why he had such an impact on what seems like thousands of people in this documentary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, Sarah Silverman said it best. He probably inspired somebody who probably wrote a script for NCIS.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's just how he was. And he felt giving his time.
People.
There's so much. So I took a picture of it. And I've kept it, and I've even Instagrammed it a couple of times just to, you know, remind people that this is important. And he wrote this in his diary. Give more. Give what you didn't get. Love more. Drop the old story.
See, Seinfeld would be like, you gotta punch it up. Where's the chuckles?
Again, I think it comes down to just somebody having this profound experience and tragedy in their life.
Yeah.
And it was highlighted in the public.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to where Jerry's pretty much had a smooth ride.
Yeah, yeah.
Celebrity-wise.
All right, you want to take a break? Come back for segment three?
I would love so.
Segment three?
This tea is running through my system.
Tea's running through my system as well.
Let's see who pees first.
This is a good night for a young comedian's first appearance on network television because the audience is in a good mood and things are really cooking. Gary is from Tucson, Arizona. Appears regularly at the Comedy Store. Tucsoners? He appears at the Comedy Store in Hollywood and at the Comedy Magic Club in Hermosa Beach, California. As I said, this is his first time, so make him feel well. Would you welcome Gary Shandling?
Thank you. Thank you. Wow, that's very nice. I'm so excited to be here. I had a great day. I went to the bank earlier today. And have you gotten your free pen yet? These are free. You just yank these things and they pop right out. I got a desk calendar, too. You need a screwdriver to change the numbers, but they're free. And then I went to the laundromat today because they have free clothes at the laundromat. And picked up a few things. And I love going to the laundromat because you see people wearing the last thing they want to wear. Have you ever noticed that? People are wearing Bermuda shorts and a Nehru jacket. And I just don't want to see that. Then I had dinner tonight at a little restaurant. You know, when you go in a place and they say, sit down, we're going to call you when your table's ready, and you sit down and you listen for your name over some cheap speaker, you know, and you never hear your name. What you hear is, so, how are you two? So. Is that us? You go ask them, honey. You look stupid. You go up there and find them. I'd feel funny, honey, but you're dressed for it. Go on up there. What they should do is just describe the people, see? Then we'd know who they're talking about. They could just go, the couple with the ugly children, your table's ready? And we'd know it's these people over here. We're so sorry. You want to cover those kids up? We're going to try to eat here. Thank you very much. Is that a nuclear accident or what? My God. I ate dinner last night at a friend of mine's house, and he has, what do you call those things? Baby. He has a baby. I'm a single guy. I don't know how to relate to this too well, you know. And the baby's crawling around on the carpet, and this baby loads up his diaper, you know. And I'm sitting there, you know, and the mother comes over and says, isn't that adorable? Brandon made a gift for Daddy. Now, I'm figuring this guy's got to be real easy to shop for on Father's Day. To get this guy, you know what I mean? Go ahead, Frank. Open it up. Go ahead. Go ahead. I made it myself, Frank, and I hope you like it. I don't have any babies. I have two dogs from a previous marriage. I have a sheepdog and I have an Irish setter. I gotta tell you about my dogs, okay? My sheepdog kicks when he sleeps, okay? Now, my friend said that means your dog's having a nightmare. Now, what's a nightmare for a dog? Did you ever stop to think about it? What, he's drinking out of the toilet and the lid falls? about it for a dog, you know? I mean, I had that one once myself and woke up screaming. But I didn't kick in my sleep. The other dog is this Irish Setter, and Irish Setters are too hyper and inbred, like my cousin Stuart. And what happens when it thunders, she digs up the carpet to get underneath the carpet to get away from the thunder. And the vet gave me these animal tranquilizers to give her. You know, they're doggy downers or something. I don't know what they are, but they tasted real minty, and they were hard to swallow. She still goes under the carpet, but I go with her now. And we have a great time. I can't wait for it to rain now. Now, my dad, I used to go camping with my dad, and he's such a wonderful guy. He's older than me, and but he's gross. Is your dad gross? I mean, my dad comes to the breakfast table like this. What's for breakfast? Come on, Dad, we're trying to eat here, huh? Want to put a robe on or something? Just, grossing out the cat, Dad, all right? Put a sheet on or something. Then he'll unbutton his pants after he eats. All dads do this. They unbutton their pants, and then he'll unzip his fly, and then you can judge how good the meal is by how far down his zipper is, you know? One time he stood up and his pants fell to the ground, you know, and we were at a restaurant, and all the other fathers turned and said, "Wow, what is he eating?" I used to go to Disneyland with him. How many of you have been on that ride? It's a small world at Disneyland. Anybody scared on that ride? Just me. Great. The worst thing about that ride is for the rest of your life in your head, you hear that darn song, don't you? For the rest of your life, it's a small world. Na 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 na. Give me a break, all right? Then I went on Pirates of the Caribbean. I'm home clean in my house. Best ride, isn't it? But I'm home clean in my house, and I'm going, yo-ho, yo-ho, na-na-na-na-na-na. Na-na, I'm making love, and I'm going, yo-ho, yo-ho, na-na-na-na-na-na, na-na-na. And the girl's going, it's a small world now. Thank you.
And we're back. This is Pop Culture Man Children. For more information on PCMC, go to the Instagram, Pop Culture Man Children. If you want to follow me on the Twitter and Instagram, at Emilio Sparks, EmilioSparks. I'm joined by Michael Buongiorno, as usual.
I'm also on Goodreads. Goodreads is a social network for people who read and read lots of books, and you're allowed to, you can comment on each other, and you can rate books, and you have a virtual bookshelf, so you can sort of keep track of what you read and when you read it. So if you want to connect with me on Goodreads, I'm just Michael Buongiorno.
Spell your last name.
Buongiorno. So it's segment three. It's time for obsessions. What are you obsessed with?
Well, I've been staring at my chair a lot lately.
What chair would that be?
The WrestleMania 31 chair.
March 29th, 2015. I'm reading the chair now.
You see the chair.
I'm looking right at the chair.
Do you want to grab the chair and then look at the detail of the chair?
I absolutely do. For our fans that don't understand what the hell we're talking about, explain the whole chair thing.
I told on this, I forget what episode, I think it was on a mini episode. Open it up, doll. I went to WrestleMania 31, and I was coming out of the arena holding this commemorative chair. Now, when you're in the first five rows of any major wrestling pay-per-view with the WWE, you're going to get a commemorative collector's chair because you spent X amount of dollars on a ticket. They're going to give you a chair to keep.
And it's really nice because it's a folding chair, but the backrest and the seat have images on them.
Yes.
It'll say, you know, what event you're at. It's really cool-looking images.
Yeah, you have Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, John Cena, Triple H, Sting, and Daniel Bryan all on this chair. So anyway, as I was walking out of the thing, I felt so grateful to be there and to be with who I was with. And, you know, the first time going out of my comfort zone and watching it from home. And because WrestleMania is always that one thing you want to go to. And this is the most wrestling I think we've ever talked on PCMC. I gave my chair to somebody that didn't have the greatest seats, and it was a little kid in a wheelchair, so I gave it to them.
What a hero.
Thank you. Years later, I was just obsessed with finding one on eBay, and I couldn't find one on eBay. I just couldn't, no matter what. I found thousands of chairs from all other pay-per-views. I just could not find this one chair.
Okay.
And then magically, it's online on eBay.
Yeah.
It's like the one time it's on eBay, and it's for cheap as well. I got it for like $100.
Mm-hmm.
And I had
it's
to
not
get
bad.
It. $100? No way. That's cheap. Normally, wrestling chairs are going for upwards of like $200 plus like $99 for shipping and handling.
Really?
So you're paying $300 for a chair. The fact that I got this for $100 is sweet.
It's pretty good.
Well,
how many
do
you have of these types of chairs?
7.
From all different events.
Yeah, I've been lucky. I've hit up 2 WrestleManias. That's been amazing for me. I've been to a SummerSlam. I've been to a whole bunch. And each time you get a commemorative chair.
You only want the ones that you've been to?
Just
collect them?
No. You collect the ones you go to.
Now, I know in wrestling a big thing is hitting people with chairs.
Yes.
Is that something you're supposed to be doing in the arena by yourself with your chairs? Is that why they give them to you?
No.
Are they trying to encourage people to be hitting each other in the aisles?
No.
No, really?
No, nobody does that.
I just feel like chairs are so big in the actual performance that it's odd that they're giving you a chair.
Well, chair shots have
It's like you go to a Gallagher show and he gives you a watermelon.
It's very rare you use a chair as a weapon of violence anymore.
Is that right?
Yes, and they don't hit them. They don't hit
so
you.
So that's
over
like
the head
old
no
school
more.
At this point.
Well, because of CTE, yeah.
Okay, so God forbid, let's say that you have some sort of degenerative disease. You find out that you've got a month to live, right? You're gonna die. To put you out of your misery, so you don't fade away.
Yeah.
Would you want me to use one of these chairs to kill you?
Absolutely.
I wouldn't tell you when it would be, though. I would just say, it's going to happen this week. It might happen at home. It might happen at work. Yeah. It might happen in the shower.
Yeah.
You're not going to see it coming, and then I'm just going to come out of nowhere with the chair and just fucking hit you in the head with it.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
You're down with that?
Yeah, I'm down.
That's the way you want to go?
Well, how I envision it?
Yeah.
Is you hit me the first time.
Sure.
And it doesn't really take.
Okay.
And I still got my senses about me.
Sure.
I'm using you to hoist myself back up, and I'm on my knee, and I'm grabbing you by, like, the waist belt.
Right.
And then I'm pulling up, and I'm looking at you, and I'm giving you a look like, do this. I just say one thing.
Yeah.
I utter one phrase. I go, sweet release.
And then I give you
the kill shot.
Yeah. I do you a fucking favor.
Yeah.
And I kill you with it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we'll have to put this in writing so I don't go to jail.
Take the chairs.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like,
I'll sit on the chair for your funeral.
Cool. Yeah. I will bequeath to you all 7.
I believe it's bequeath, not bequeath. Bequeath is when a woman, her vagina does something.
I'd give you one of those, too.
Thank you. Is there any particular one you want me to murder you with?
Oh, man, you don't forget your first WrestleMania, so you
So this one right here.
Yeah, the one that you're holding, yeah.
March 29th, 2015. Okay.
Yeah, it's nice, right?
Yeah, it's nice.
I was thinking of getting that one autographed.
By who?
By the gentleman on that chair. So
every one of them?
Yep, Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, John Cena, Triple H, Sting, and Daniel Bryan. I'm thinking that that's the next journey.
It's funny you say John Cena because that links into my obsession.
Which is what?
Which is the movie Blockers just came out. Although it's really called Cock Blockers, really. You know what I mean?
Well, there's a picture of a rooster.
Right. It's like they're trying to have it both ways.
Yeah.
So the movie Blockers came out, and look, it was funny, it was cute, it had a really sweet story. I'd say it's a solid A-, B+. But my obsession is not necessarily the movie Cock Blockers, but with the audience reviews on RottenTomatoes.com.
How does that go?
The critic reviews are certified fresh, 83% positive.
Wow, I would not think that movie would be
that.
Yeah,
a lot of people think it's funny and it's good. The audience review is 55% and it's basically rotten. If you don't know what the movie's about, it's about 3 girls who make a pact to lose their virginity on their prom, and their parents, played by Ike Barinholtz, Leslie Mann, and John Cena, they want to stop this from happening. So they're trying to stop their kids. And Ike Barinholtz's daughter is gay. She makes a pact to have sex with her boyfriend. She's afraid to come out and stuff like that. So in it, she kind of comes to terms with that she likes girls, and then she tells her father, and her father is very supportive of her. And wouldn't you know it, that's what's making people not like this movie.
Really?
Yeah, so we've got another case of a big disparity between what the critics think and what the audience say. And I have to say, some of these are amazing. I actually saved some of these to read you. Look, they're all anonymous, so 2 stars. This was a giant turd. Only reason why critics liked it was because it had such a liberal propaganda in it. Was disgusting.
Oh, wow.
This is another review. The movie plays to a specific audience and isn't the fun, raunchy movie you would expect to see, like Superbad or American Pie, that was made for everyone. The story was slow, a lot of jokes fell flat, and the raunchy scenes were more gross than funny. Ike was the only redeeming quality, and want to see him in his own movie. The social justice themes are injected into this dull movie to make the critics give a false good review to avoid political backlash, i.e. 2016 Ghostbusters. The audience this movie plays to will enjoy the movie. For everyone else, it is a large middle finger trolling you. All right, here's another review. They tried to be funny, but the bashing of dads and the gay agenda pushing made it hard to enjoy this female version of Superbad. Here's another one. As a father of a daughter and a son, I would have to say thank God they didn't see this movie. I can relate with John Cena's character the most. This movie just demonstrates how kids rule the family now and parents don't properly raise their sons or daughters to save themselves from marriage. Again, modern day spin on the unfortunate reality of morality and values going down the toilet. Just this time with teen girls as main characters and not boys. So, you've got a lot of people that are upset because the gay character is treated as a human being, and they're not down for that. And you also have a lot of people that seem upset because, spoiler alert, the kind of lesson of the movie is that the parents are overbearing, and in the end, the parents sort of realize that they need to trust their daughters the way they would trust their sons, and they're not bad kids, so you know, they're adults now and make their own decision. So that's what I think some people are upset about. Some people are like, oh my God, like the point of the movie is they're going to let their kids have sex. And
they do know it's a comedy, right?
No, they don't.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Well, I think there's a certain contingency of the public where when they see any kind of liberal ideology or just progressive or just like nice to people ideology in a movie or a TV show, instead of seeing it as a genuine ideology, they see it as like a scam that's put in. Like you saw one of the reviewers said, they just put it in so the critics can't say anything bad about it. Like they think it's like an agenda or it's like some sort of like a hidden scheme where it's more just like, no, the people who made this movie just like don't hate gay people the way you do.
See, I think this is the problem with today. Everybody and their mother has an issue and an outcry and they're easily offended by something that, are you serious? Really? It's a movie about kids wanting to lose their virginity and the parents doing anything and everything to stop that.
Right.
There's a scene where John Cena chugs a beer from his asshole.
Right. Movies are important. Pop culture is important, obviously. That's one of the theses of the show. So I would never say, like, well, it's just a movie. But I would say that...
You don't think that Blockers is just a movie?
No, I don't think anything is just anything.
You've seen
anything.
It. Now, you've seen it.
Yeah.
I have not.
Yeah.
Are there any social ramifications about the film?
Yeah, I think the movie does have a really nice message about how do you treat girls as opposed to boys and, you know, acceptance. But even if it didn't, I would always say that, you know, whether it be a movie, a book, a TV show, or a video game or whatever, if it is created and exists in the culture, it has an ideology to it.
Yeah.
Everything is worth looking at. Everything is worth analyzing. So I would never, even if the creator said, well, we were just trying to make a movie, I'd still say, well, there's still stuff in there. You know, you're still a person that exists in the culture and ideas are coming through you when you make your movie. To me, my problem is I don't agree with these people. I don't understand why they're giving it negative reviews just because the parents don't have this double standard. Trust their girls.
I want to know if they remember their adolescence and their teenage years when they're starting to discover their body. Now, I know and you know that when you're that age, male or female, you're a raging hormone.
Like, the girls are totally raunchy in this.
Because, you know,
they're people, and that's what real
that's
people
what
like.
It is. Like, you know, it's not like other movies where it's like you're supposed to be pretty and pristine and you're not supposed to talk in a specific tone.
Right. I think some people wanted this movie to end with the girls all deciding
we're gonna wait for marriage.
Yeah. Which, by the way, spoiler alert, you can skip ahead 30 seconds. Only one out of the three actually does have sex. So it's actually not even that raunchy. And the one that does have sex, she's clearly really in love with her boyfriend. And it's very sweet.
Blockers ain't doing nothing different that American Pie wasn't doing.
Right.
And the only reason why it was acceptable and got a pass was because it was about a group of dudes trying to get their nut off.
Right.
And it's except, well, boys are just being boys. Fuck that. Everybody wants to get laid. Girls want to do it. Guys want to do it. The animals do it.
Right.
It's in our DNA. It's the last primal thing that we have as humans that we do.
Right.
So you know what? Don't sit on your high horse, because guess what? The people that are writing that, I guarantee you, they've had sex and they probably masturbated a whole bunch of times.
Oh, they're all sinners. They're all filthy sinners.
Should we give them an update on a future episode to come?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know when we're going to put it out.
But they should just know.
Yeah. It's coming.
It's the crossover event of the year.
Yeah, Emilio finally made me watch a WWE event. You know, he complained that The Last Jedi was long. WrestleMania is hours upon hours.
Take one for the team.
I've got questions. Do you want to go bye-bye?
I think we should. Let's plug some things before we go.
Cock Blockers in theaters now. Bring your grandma, bring your kids.
There you go. As far as this program goes, iTunes, iTunes, iTunes. Go to the iTunes, type in Pop Culture Man Children, hit subscribe, give us a review, say something nice. If you have an idea for a upcoming future episode, please, by all means, share it with us. You can also do the same thing via our Instagram page at Pop Culture Man Children. If you want to get to me, easy. Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, your mother's ass, at Emilio Sparks, EmilioSparks. Come say hi.
Don't forget we're also on Stitcher.
We are.
Don't forget the Stitchy.
We are. We're on the Stitchy.
Ladies and gentlemen, go bye-bye.
Go bye-bye.